From the guy who's read more about Bitcoin than anybody else you know, this is a Guy's Take episode. What is up, Crypto Economy crew? This is Guy Swan, and you are listening to the Crypto Economy Podcast. We are going to be doing, this will be a little bit shorter than the usual episode, particularly since recently, like, all my episodes seem to be like an hour long, no matter how hard I try to make them shorter. So, and I'm feeling a little bit under the weather today. I'm trying to fix it with a significant amount of coffee, but considering that part of my problem is a stomach ache, I don't think it's doing me any good, but I'm still trying anyway. We are going to read about, this is something I've been wanting to talk about, and the Bitcoin OpTech newsletter. I'm labeling this one a guy's take because we're not actually going to read the whole thing. But if you do not follow the Bitcoin OpTech newsletter, you definitely should be. It's bitcoinops.org. That's just OPS.org. And it is, who runs this? I forget. I think it's like John Newberry and principals and associates, David Harding, Carl Dong, Adam Jonas, John Newberry, Mike Schmidt, Steve Lee. Okay, so there's a number of guys. And then some sponsors for Bitcoin OpTech. But it's just basically a newsletter. They go over like updates and changes to the code. Really, really good resource to stay up on what's going on in Bitcoin, what the developments are that are happening, what's, you know, new, explaining what's going on. And I use them a lot. I always at least skim the newsletter when I get it in my email, even if I'm low on time. So a good bathroom read. So we are going to hit on Bitcoin OpTech newsletter number 49, all about Erle. Well, this is just one of the pieces of news that is out, and they do a pretty decent job of explaining what Erle is, how it works, and its benefits. And then we're just going to talk about the implications of this. And it's a very similar in like implementation to something like Dandelion in the fact that it's not it's not part of the consensus protocol, so it can just kind of be rolled out like without, you know, any issues. Just as soon as they get to the point where they have a good working version of it, people can put it out on the network, and then it will work with anybody who's using it, and it doesn't need like a soft fork or anything crazy like that. But it is a really big efficiency improvement. And before we get into it, let me just go ahead and read this section, and then we'll discuss it at length. And I'll talk a little bit about Dandelion too, how the two of these things can be a huge improvement to just kind of network analysis in general, and then like maintaining a node on the network, like just the efficiency and resource cost minimization for having a fully validating node and keeping the network fully in sync as solidly as possible. Okay, so we'll read the section real quick, and then we'll just kind of talk about what this means. All right, so under news, they've got Erle proposed, and this is straight up Relay with the E and the R swapped. I don't know who named this, but it's Erle instead of Relay. All right, so Erle proposed, a new paper by Gleb Namenko, Peter Wella, Gregory Maxwell, Sasha Fedorova, and Ivan Beshatsnik, describes an alternative transaction relay protocol, Erle. Currently, when a node learns about a new transaction that passes its relay policy, it announces the transaction ID of that transaction to all of its peers, except any peers that announced it previously. So they get it from a peer, and then they immediately turn around and send out the ID of that transaction to every other peer except for the one they received it from. This is very simple and effective policy, but it's not efficient. Most of the announcements a node receives are announcements for transactions that have already learned about from a different peer a few moments before, a redundancy that wastes about 44% of all node bandwidth, according to the paper. The paper attempts to reduce that redundancy using the author's Erlay protocol, which separates relaying into two phases, a fan-out phase and a reconciliation phase. In the fan-out phase, a node will only directly announce new transactions it has learned about to a maximum of 8 peers selected from the node's outbound peers. So interject real quick. The old fan-out phase, where they broadcast the transaction, was just a flood. That's kind of the basis of the how transactions spread across the network. And there was a ton of redundancy. This I didn't know exactly how much, but the paper does go into it if you want to read it. It's about, 14 pages? I mostly just skimmed it. I read a couple of sections in depth, but they do have, like, pretty decent charts and, like, graphics kind of showing how the redundancy is between nodes and then the differences. And then they also have data on the actual bandwidth. But the old system was a flood in the sense that they didn't care. No node cared about whether or not the other, or even checked to see if any of the other nodes that they were connected to already had this transaction. They just immediately pushed it to every single node that they were connected to, except for the peer, obviously, that they received it from. That was the only quote-unquote exclusion to that. So now we've got a fan-out phase that has changed, and then a new phase of this that's a reconciliation phase. So let's go ahead and jump right back in. So in the reconciliation phase, a node will periodically request from each of its outbound peers a sketch of short transaction identifiers, or short TXIDs, for all the new transactions that peer would normally announce to the node. Sketches are created using the libminisketch library described in newsletter number 26, which implements a highly bandwidth-efficient set reconciliation technique based on error correction codes. Upon receipt of a requested sketch, the node itself also generates a sketch of all the new transactions that it would normally announce to its peer. The node combines its sketch with the peer's sketch to produce a list of any differences between the two. That difference contains the short TXIDs of any transactions that are in one set of new transactions but not the other. The node can then request any transactions that it doesn't have from that peer and proceed to query its next peer for that peer's sketch. This is repeated for a new peer once each second, allowing the node to quickly receive any transactions that it did not receive via a fan-out announcement. The simple two-step protocol of fan-out and reconciliation describes the primary operation of Erlay. The remaining parts of the protocol described and analyzed in the paper cover the optimal parameters to use for the sketches and a series of fallback steps to take if a particular attempt at set reconciliation fails. After describing the Erlay protocol, the paper analyzes its performance using both a simulated network of 60,000 nodes, similar in number and use to the current Bitcoin network, and a live set of 100 nodes spread internationally across several data centers. The most notable result is that Erlay reduces the amount of bandwidth used to announce the existence of new transactions by 84%. However, it does take about 80% longer, roughly 2.6 seconds, for transactions to propagate to all of the nodes in the network. It's still the case that Bitcoin transactions can only be confirmed once every 10 minutes on average, so a 3-second slowdown seems like a reasonable price to pay for a major reduction in bandwidth. Now, that is a huge reduction in bandwidth, and that's not total bandwidth. This is bandwidth specifically in total bandwidth consumption is actually a huge reduction as well, But this is the 84% reduction is specifically in the movement of transactions throughout the entire network. It takes 84% less bandwidth to get transactions through the network, whereas you're still obviously downloading blocks in the blockchain normally, and that data is not accounted for in the 84%. But on that, there are a number of other bandwidth savings and efficiencies that have already been implemented into Bitcoin regarding reconstructing blocks and doing so with as little data cost as possible, and more improvements on that front always, because that's one of the most incredible things about this is the engineers are always, they're constantly thinking about how to make this thing more efficient, how to spread less data for the absolute maximum amount of trustlessness, I guess, independence for all the nodes. So we don't compromise the security at all, but there are all these different ways and methods that are constantly being improved upon to make the entire network more efficient and solve a lot of these resource cost problems. And I love that that has always been the focus. And I want to go a little bit more into that in just a minute, but let's go ahead and keep going. There's still just a couple paragraphs left. So having established that the protocol is a worthwhile efficiency improvement, can't talk today, the paper considers the most important of its secondary aspects, its effect on privacy. Currently, each Bitcoin Core node slightly delays the relaying of transactions to its peers. This makes it more difficult for spy nodes to use timing correlations to guess that the first peer they receive a transaction from is the peer that created the transaction. Multiple simulations were run testing the effectiveness of the current relay protocol against the effectiveness of Erlay for various amounts of spy nodes among network peers, from 5% spy nodes to 60% spy nodes. In cases where the spy nodes were public nodes accepting incoming transactions, Erlay always performed as well or better than the current protocol. In cases where the spy nodes were private nodes making connections to honest nodes, Erlay sometimes performed better and sometimes performed worse, but never more than 10% worse, and this worst case is an unlikely situation. The paper also notes that Erlay is compatible with the proposed BIP-156 Dandelion protocol for further improving the network's resistance to spy nodes. Considering future possible changes to Bitcoin relay policy, the paper notes that an increase in the number of outbound peers from 8 to 32 would only increase the bandwidth used by a node to announce the existence of new transactions by 32% with Erlay compared to 300% using the current protocol. As described in the paragraph above about Erlay's two phases, new transactions would still only be fanned out via direct announcements to 8 peers, but nodes would perform set reconciliation with all 32 peers. A four-fold improvement in relay connectivity improves the chance that time-sensitive transactions for contract protocols like Lightning will make it to miners quickly. In addition to libmini-sketch, the code changes necessary to implement Erlay in Bitcoin Core amount to only 584 lines of code, and the CPU-intensive part of set reconciliation has been benchmarked to take less than a millisecond under conditions that are worse than expected in practice. If no objections are raised over the paper, Nomenko has announced his intention to write a BIP and work to get Erlay included in a subsequent version of Bitcoin Core. The method used for transaction relay is part of the P2P network protocol. It's not a consensus rule, so the change could begin operation as soon as multiple users upgrade to it, although we expect nodes will also include a backwards compatible mode to support peers who have not upgraded. All right, at this point, let's take a quick break and hit our sponsor, and we'll jump right back in. All right, so that is the section. They go on in the newsletter, which I encourage you to read again. There's actually a really good on operating on Lightning presentation by the Bitrefill CEO, and You can actually watch the video. They've got a link to it in the newsletter. Again, this is a newsletter. Oh, whoops. I did not mean to start that. It is loud in my ears. Y'all can't hear that. Shut up. Okay. There's really good. I haven't watched the video, but I did read the summary of it in this newsletter. And again, this is newsletter 49, I think. Yes. Newsletter number 49 at Bitcoin Ops. That's BitcoinOPS.org. If you don't know how to spell Bitcoin, then I can't help you. Okay, so the whole idea of set reconciliation, and you can go back and read OpTech newsletter number 26 for more details on the libmini sketch that was back when it was proposed and discussed about, because there's a whole thing on GitHub from SIPA evaluating, which is Peter Wella, that's his username up there, talking about the sketch size and all this different stuff. But it basically works, and they say, where is it? Implements a highly bandwidth efficient set reconciliation technique based on error correction codes. So this is really based on the concept of error correction, sort of like in packets. Like, you do this all the time on the internet. Anytime you have a connection with a peer, or you're getting a website or anything, you're constantly at the router, like modem device level. I guess not the router, you're specifically the modem. There is actually error correction in the bits that are being received. Like, that's the kind of thing that your ISP and the actual infrastructure is doing behind the scenes to make sure that you're getting every packet in the right order and without missing any pieces of data. And it's kind of like a checksum for like a Bitcoin address. That's how you can like get a couple of, I think it's Betch 32, that you can accidentally type like 3 or 4 characters wrong. It may even be up to 5 in the, like, if you actually had to manually type out the address, there's a checksum at the end that will basically verify a little math problem, essentially, to see if that address is accurate. And you can get a couple of, just a couple of letters or numbers wrong in your address, and it will just show up as invalid. You won't accidentally send it to an address that nobody controls. So it prevents you from making a mistake in something like that. In that same way, we use these little kind of checksums, these little error correction codes, these little math problems to help fill in gaps and account for the fact that there are missing bits and messages all the time, that packets sometimes come out of order. For some reason, we'll get packet 10 before we get packet 9, like that kind of thing. This has happened all over the place, all over the internet, in a bunch of various ways. So it's a very common part of all internet protocols, pretty much. And basically how it works is that you have this little sketch. Like, let's say I have... in the case of transactions, I have transactions 1, 2, and 3 in my mempool, and then you have transactions just 1 and 2. You don't have number 3 yet. Well, we create these little sketches, these little essentially, I guess, math problems. I don't know exactly the details of the sketch, but I know the concept that, a stupidly simplified version is 1, 2, and 3 add up to 6, right? So if you have just 1 and 2, yours is going to add up to just 3. So rather than sending each other, like, our entire set of information, we can basically add them together and exchange our sums of the data. So you have 1 and 2, which make 3. I have 1, 2, and 3, which make 6. We can compare the 6 and the 3 and the number of data points that we have, and you can take your 6 and subtract 3 and easily figure out that there is a number 3 that's missing from your data set that is in my data set. So basically, like, I'm giving you the answer to a joint math problem, and you can know the variable that is missing. So you can actually recreate that element and then request the full data from me, because I have the transaction that you don't have. And in the case of, like, the normal flood protocol, there's tons of redundancy there. obviously there's an 84% improvement in bandwidth. But the paper actually goes into it and talks about it, like just the very idea of how nodes connect and flood information to the network is that for the number of nodes on the network, the default number of connections is 8. So whatever, however many connections or the number of connections that we have in that network is going to be, 7 of them are going to be redundant as far as like announcements. So if the number of connections are 8 times the number of nodes that we have, anything that we receive, we are broadcasting out to 7 other people, which means 7 times the number of nodes is the number of redundant announcements that end up happening if everybody uses this policy. So it is a huge, I guess you wouldn't say waste necessarily, because until we have a better option, it's the surest way to make sure everybody gets every single transaction. And there's a trade-off with this. There's a almost equivalent increase in the amount of time it takes to get transactions all the way across the network to propagate to every node. But it's not much. It's 2.6 seconds. And the fact that this is something that does not require some sort of soft fork, it's not part of the consensus rules, it's just how information is sent and consolidated between nodes on the network. I think this makes this just kind of a no-brainer because it's such a, you don't have to use it, you know, like if, as long as they're like, you know, backwards compatible, which I think makes perfect sense, it can save bandwidth basically just by having, you know, 30% of the nodes operating on this and saving whatever the equivalent bandwidth that would be at least among those nodes. Very similar to the way that Dandelion actually benefits the privacy for all other nodes on the network, even if only 30% of the nodes are using Dandelion. But again, it doesn't affect anybody else. None of the other nodes have to know that this is going on. It just obviously makes things more efficient if everybody upgrades. But basically what they're doing is the fan-out stage doesn't publish to all 7 of the other nodes. So like with 8 connections, you receive it from 1 and then broadcast to the other 7, is that you are basically broadcasting only to the most, I think it's like 3, if I'm not mistaken. Where was it in this paper? I already forgot. It's basically like a limit that would suggest, it's the lower limit on the number of nodes that you need to send it to have a high probability of still those nodes sending to their peers. And because of the amount of connectivity in the network, most people are still going to get that transaction, even though it's not a 100% flood. But the fact that you can actually, it's crazy that the savings for all announcement traffic is actually 43% for Erlay versus the normal flood method. But then you can increase the connectivity to 32 peers, and it's only like a 34%? With these numbers, 32% increase in bandwidth. So you can actually multiply by 4 the number of connections you have. And the more connections you have in the network, the more secure the network is. Like, that's a key element to scale the number of connections, because the higher the connection number, like per peer, the more resilient the network is, and the more resistant it is to any kind of spy nodes or someone trying to split the network up. You know, like, I mean, literally, it's kind of like the whole idea of decentralization, just in more nodes in general, is that if you only have to maintain 8 connections to trick 1 peer, well, now you have to figure out how to interject yourself into 32 different connections. You're always going to be in a more decentralized and more resistant environment the more connections you have, because you're less reliant on any single or fewer nodes in the network. So that's a really important part, is that the fact that we can increase the connectivity of peers without increasing, in fact, upgrade from 8 to 32 connections and get that significant boost in the higher connectivity without any increase in the bandwidth. In fact, still a minor reduction in bandwidth versus what we're doing now is pretty amazing. That's a huge efficiency boost and incredibly, I see that as a huge advantage for the network and being able to get that level of added decentralization without the added resource costs, without overly making it overly redundant, and we still get what we would have in the normal situation where you're fanning out the broadcast of the transaction to 8 peers, which is what you would technically normally be doing when you have 8 connections. Now, another really cool part of this is that it does not affect privacy. In fact, it actually increases the privacy just a little bit in most scenarios, because just because you have a connection to a node does not mean that you're going to get that. You're not going to immediately get any transaction they broadcast. Because the fan out is to a smaller subset of nodes, you actually run into a situation where you might be one of that node's 8 connections, and when they broadcast a transaction from their wallet, that doesn't mean that you're going to get that transaction immediately from that node. You might get it from someone else first, because you might not be, you know, if they're only broadcasting to 3 of the nodes instead of all 8, you might not be one of those 3. So I think in most cases, just kind of on its face, it would make sense that it adds a little bit of privacy. But clearly in there, even though I didn't go into it in depth, there are situations where it doesn't really help. And it's basically the same story as the current Flood protocol. I don't exactly know why, but no doubt they thought about it much more in depth than I did. But the cool thing is that, again, this is very similar in Dandelion to Dandelion in the fact that it doesn't require, you know, any soft forks or any like huge change. It's not consensus rules, so anybody can just install it when the new protocol is ready. And for those who have not, we've done a couple of episodes on Dandelion, and I did a write-up on Medium and then a subsequent read of that article on this show. The short version of Dandelion is it's a really clever way to broadcast the transaction in a private, like with a private, it's called the stem and then the fluff. So there's two phases of transaction propagation in this sense. And the stem phase is you basically don't announce to the network that you have this transaction. You just send it to one peer privately, and there's basically a little part of the protocol that's flipping a coin that has a 1 in 10 chance of broadcasting it publicly. And they flip the coin, and, you know, 9 times out of 10, it comes up, go private, and that keeps it in the stem phase. So you don't really know how long it's going to stay in the stem phase. It might, you know, you might flip a public broadcast on the 4th node, or it might go for 20 nodes privately before it gets broadcast out publicly. But what that does is there's a single line of nodes getting the transaction through the network, as opposed to just fanning out immediately from the person who created the transaction. And because of that, anybody who's waiting to see, like when you're positioned in the network as a spy node, you can time attack, or you can time the difference between getting a transactions from certain nodes, and you can start to single out which node it may have actually originated from. And after the you go through the stem phase in Dandelion and it finally goes public, it basically, as soon as anybody else sees it in the public broadcast, all the nodes that were in the stem immediately publish the transaction publicly. So, like, you have this, like, set of private, like, this little private string of nodes getting the transaction. And then as soon as somebody flips the coin and says, okay, let's broadcast this publicly, all the other nodes see it and everybody publishes it all at once. So if you have a stem phase with 10 nodes, when a spy node is looking on the network, all they see is that it came from 10 different places at once, which they're not even going to be able to pinpoint those 10 places, because it, you know, like as soon as the timing attack, you attempt to do that, it really just screws up in a major way the ability to pinpoint where things come from on the network, because you have these little private channels that are sending transactions without telling anybody, and then it just floods from there. And this, in combination with Dandelion, because this does not affect whether or not Dandelion works, like it doesn't change the application of Dandelion at all, actually, and obviously it's also compatible with it. The combination of these two things could lead to a significant resource savings for the node, as well as additional privacy in a couple of different ways. And it would be a huge thing to see, to really see the network analysis side of pinpointing where transactions and data originate be essentially solved, to the point that it's there's huge plausible deniability, like that anything that they think they've figured out is just a degree of probability. It is not a we know where this transaction or this piece of data came from. And they've already done a number of different, they even mentioned in the Bitcoin Optech, they've made a number of little improvements to this already, in the fact that you're already flipping a tiny little coin for how long your delay is for broadcasting a transaction. So they've already kind of screwed that up a little bit, but both of these, Erlay and Dandelion, together, which hopefully they get rolled out. Hopefully they get rolled out really quickly, because both of them together, I feel like, just kind of eliminate that problem to a point that it's sufficient and is probably not necessary unless we learn about some new type of attack in the future that they then have to account for and respond to. But for every known network analysis, essentially these two things combined would basically break the ability to do that reliably. And that's a really, really cool thing, specifically because these are just peer-to-peer, like this is just about data transmission with nodes on the network. So none of this is consensus-based. None of this has the problem of we have to all agree that this is, well, technically they have to agree to put it in the actual Bitcoin Core implementation, but it's not a consensus protocol change. So that's all really, really good news. And I've seen Erlay pop up quite a bit, and it's a really, really interesting protocol change, and seems to be a huge improvement. And the fact that the libmini sketch, there's a couple of things about it that makes it really cool, because these things are kind of universal. Like obviously this, in the case of Erlay, they're using it to broadcast transactions and figure out what the differences are between two different nodes and which transactions they have. But this could just as easily be Rusty Russell actually has a thread in the Lightning Dev mailing list talking about how, well, you could just as easily use this sketch system to send the Lightning routing table updates. So you could, we have like kind of that same problem in sending a ton of bandwidth back and forth for the routing table of the Lightning network. And as that grows, we need a lot of efficiency improvements on figuring out how to measure what channels are going where, what has a balance or a liquidity in what direction and all that kind of stuff. There's a lot of information. Obviously, it's not as much information as managing an entire blockchain, but inevitably we're going to have something with, you have millions of nodes and tens of millions of channels. That's a ton of data. So we need these efficiency improvements on the base layer, and we just as easily, or just as importantly, need them on the next layer. And we can do this again for sending information on the Lightning network. It just needs to be reapplied. So libmini sketch is a pretty universal tool that we can use to aggregate data on any peer-to-peer network or additional layer that we put on top of this, which is really exciting that we can kind of continue to do this on layer 2, layer 3, et cetera, et cetera. It's not something that is limited to just transaction broadcasting on the Bitcoin network. It's a pretty universal tool, which is really, really cool. So I believe we will just go ahead and close this one here. I don't think there was anything else I wanted to note. I will link to the actual paper It's 14 pages and there's a lot of great detail in it. Again, I didn't actually read it all the way through. I just kind of scanned it and hit some solid points. But there is some really cool stuff and tons of little charts if you really want to dig into it like a super nerd. So I will link to that so you can check that out. And obviously, I will link to the newsletter number 49 from Bitcoin Optech. And if you are not subscribed to Bitcoin Optech, I don't know what you're doing. I don't know how you expect to stay up on all the cool stuff and on the development side and understanding what all this stuff is, because Bitcoin Optech is literally the source for that. The Bitcoin Dev mailing list is like decent, but a lot of that stuff is over my head. The work that the Bitcoin Optech guys are doing is amazing because they just explain it like this, like in basic English. Like, there's some degree of complexity to it, but for anybody who's been in Bitcoin long enough to know the terms, this is the easiest way to get that information. So definitely sign up for that newsletter. They're a wonderful resource, completely free. This is just totally just a volunteer effort to make this stuff understandable. And of course, there's that video by the BitRefill CEO talking about Lightning Network and trying to roll it out, and what it's like to do business with Lightning and the fee issues and stuff. And I'm going to watch the video, and their little write-up about it is really good. And it sounds like it's going to have a lot of really solid information on kind of the challenges of working with Lightning. And that's always a fun discussion. So I will link to that as well, but you can also get it in the Bitcoin Optech newsletter. All right, I guess that'll close us out. That's everything I wanted to hit on Erle. If I miss something, maybe I'll do an update later, but it's just a really cool thing, and I figured you guys would be interested in hearing about it. Hopefully that comes out soon. We will stay up to date on when that BIP hits, and I think Dandelion should be pretty close. I haven't heard any news on when that is being, or if that is being added into Bitcoin Core and when, but we will stay up to date on that. Probably best place to keep an eye on it is Bitcoin Optech newsletter. So with that, thank you guys so much. Don't forget to check out those links, and don't forget to follow me at The Crypto Economy on Twitter. And if you enjoy this show, if you enjoy the Guys Take episodes, if you enjoy the quick reads and all the stuff that I cover daily on this show, any support that you can give is a huge help. Sharing this out to get it in front as many people as possible is a huge, huge help. And obviously you can support the show by actually becoming a supporting listener, which you can do straight on anchor.fm. Or you can donate some Bitcoin or some Satoshi to my Lightning tip jar or my Bitcoin address, which you can find on the website at cryptoeconomy.life. Thank you guys so much. And until next time, I'm Guy Swan signing off. You have been listening to the Crypto Economy Podcast. We got some more fun stuff coming tomorrow. And until then, take it easy, guys.